Introduce yourself, please.
I'm Stephanie Clayton, second-term Kansas State Representative for the lovely 19th House District.
This is a very familiar voice. We're going to explore that, but first the open. This is State House Blend. I'm Sam Zeff.
And I'm Brian Ellison. We're using coffee
and donuts
to better understand the legislatures on both sides of the state line,
the issues and the people in Topeka
and Jeff City. Here we go.
And joining Stephanie and me this morning in the KCUR production studio is David Jordan from Lawrence. Thanks for driving over.
Thanks for having me.
And my colleague Steve Vatbrock from The Pitch. Thanks for coming on and being on the show again.
Thanks for having me on.
We welcome Stephanie back to our happy little podcast. And so I want to get just a quick update on the kids and the pets. And I want to hear what you did this summer.
Oh, this is great. This is the only year that I will have my children in the same school unless someone decides to stay in graduate school for the rest of their lives. So I have a son who is now in kindergarten and a daughter who is in sixth grade at our neighborhood elementary school.
Oh, it's terrific.
So as far as pets
and I pray go, that they don't want to stay in graduate school forever.
But well, yeah, you know, they say the truly educated never graduate.
That's my hope for you.
It gets to be a point where you don't want to start paying for too much post-grad work. So I've already let them know this. We want to be preemptive. It's funny because on the last podcast we mentioned that praying mantises are things that we keep. We have another one. It's just that time of year you see one and you're like, oh, I got to catch it. My children have terrible allergies, and so we don't get traditional pets. And so my son decided to name it the same thing that we named the last one, Melissa. So, and I asked him why, and he said, because that's just what you call all mantises. Mm-hmm. And so you know, Melissa 2.
He's not the first one to say that, by the way.
Yeah. You know, this is, I'm going to stay out of that one, but nope, she's doing well. And then I'm in the process of remodeling my kitchen. My father is well versed in all things carpentry and electric. And so basically what he'll do is he does the main work and then sort of I'm like his apprentice. And so I've learned how to do all manner of things I never thought I would learn how to do. So.
And that's how you spent your summer? No vacation or anything?
No. Okay. Reps never sleep.
All right. That's a but it is a worthwhile project. We have you back here because there is just a lot of education news that we want to talk about. Merit pay, perhaps a new way of judging Kansas high school students. We got this committee going about a formula. I want to touch on all of that. But first, we take our first trip around the table. And David Jordan, your first your thought or your question for Stephanie.
I'm glad we'll get into education a lot. As a new Kansan, my wife and I moved back here about a year ago.
From where?
From Massachusetts, actually. Mm-hmm. And it's actually amazing. I find myself she's a native Kansan that moved to Massachusetts for a year and dragged me back, and I'm excited to be here. But I find that I'm paying more taxes in Kansas than in Massachusetts, which is, you know, contrary to what most would believe. You know, every time we go to the grocery store, we're paying, you know, nearly 10 cents on the dollar in taxes, which for a family struggling is a meal or two each week. So what's your outlook with the budget situation and chances of looking at taxes and making them a little bit more fair going into the session?
He's asking you. I have no vote.
I didn't know. You mentioned that we were going around the table, so I was like, okay, now do we this is a very important question that you asked. I voted no on the last tax plan because that raised sales taxes. And the legislative district that I represent goes from Metcalf to State Line. So I go all the way to State Line, which this is sort of it's a real 1-2 punch on the people that I represent. Although, unlike you, at least the people that I represent can go to Missouri quite easily and purchase their groceries there. I represent one of the most senior legislative districts in Johnson County. So I represent a lot of people who live on a fixed income. So when you raise their sales taxes, you're hitting them pretty hard. This is also a problem because you have smaller businesses in my district that, you know, you can't blame people for going over to Missouri, but it does cause a pretty detrimental effect to smaller local businesses. Now, a lot of my colleagues in the state house sort of follow the philosophy that consumption-based tax is the only truly fair tax.
By the way, we refer that as a sales tax here on State House Blend. We do not refer to it as a consumption tax.
Well,
if you please.
Yes. Oh, well, indeed. I just want to talk about a lot about how the language that I hear in Topeka is a lot different than what I hear when I talk to the regular folks that I represent. You were mentioning about how this sort of this tax ends up pricing you out of extra meals when you're purchasing things at the grocery store. And this is what I hear from the moms that I talk to, you know, because I am a mom. You just heard how young my kids are. So I hear a lot from my constituency on the soccer field. I hear from them when we're having coffee at church on Sunday while the kids, you know, after we've sent them down to Sunday school, when we can actually have a conversation. This is what I hear is my grocery bill is going up. Why is this happening? And It's highly frustrating because there's this whole idea that if you move to sales tax, that it's somehow fairer, but it's not. We know who it affects. And, you know, I'd like to it's not just moms, but I think about it as a mom tax. It's like, oh, let's go ahead and hit those people hard.
Do you think your colleagues around the state are hearing from the moms in their district as well?
Yes.
At least the ones that refer to this as a consumption tax versus a sales tax, or I'd say a tax on working folks?
I really do. And there were a lot of people who really didn't want this tax plan that we ultimately decided on to be the plan. And these aren't just people who tend to track more liberal. These were some of my most conservative colleagues. But ultimately, we found out that there was no way that any sort of reasonable tax plan that could have passed the House, it would have gotten killed in the Senate. And had it not gotten killed there, it would have been vetoed. So this is it's one of the more frustrating aspects of politics. I don't expect anyone to feel sorry for me. But this is one of those things where you're sitting there helplessly knowing what the solution is. And knowing that you could pass it through one chamber, but it's going to be dead on arrival when it gets to the east side of the building. And that was a heartbreaker.
I have a couple of thoughts on that. But first, I want to get Steve into the conversation. What's on your mind?
Well, I wanted to get a sense to the extent that there's a prevailing view among your constituents one way or the other. And I'll just share a quick observation. When I started reporting in the Kansas City area in about 2005, 2006 timeframe, I remember when I was covering Kansas politics, I got the sense that particularly in Johnson County, there was a very strong sense of almost protectionism about schools and about spending on schools. And my sense is that over time, the conversation on that is transitioning toward this idea that schools have plenty of money. They have a lot of money and maybe too much money. And when you talk to constituents, what's their attitude about education right now? Is the feeling that they feel like the K-12 system is in peril, or do they are they coming around to this notion that schools are bloated and could be cut further without too much detriment to the quality of education in Johnson County?
I think there are several different regions of Johnson County that are different. I grew up in Shawnee, which really is not that far out, right? But especially as you start doing politics in Johnson County, as you start volunteering for different campaigns, you realize that it is balkanized. If you look at which legislative districts went for which presidential candidates and so on and so forth. And as far as the governor goes, you have very different areas and very different schools of thought. Overall, the constituents that I speak to and that speak to me, and I try to, you know, if I could talk to every single one of them every day, I would. But most of them, you know, obviously have their own goings on. But I hear still a lot of the protectionism of schools. And I think a lot of this is because my constituents are, as a rule, older and more rooted into the community. Most of the homes in my legislative district were built in about the 50s and 60s. And so the people who bought these houses brand new are still living there. They're very dialed in. I hear some politicians lament how uninformed their voters are. Oh, my voters are very informed. So the first time I ran for office, I was the one who was learning, not them. So So you still have a lot of that traditional protectionism. This is the old school Shawnee Mission District, you know, that sort of stalwart area, right? You don't see that as much, I don't think, in more of the newer areas, more of the outskirts. And even as the homes start to turn over in my legislative district, there are people who grew up there like my husband, who graduated from South in 89, and we bought the house that his parents used to own. So that's where we're raising our kids. They'll go to the same schools that their father went to. And this is more typical than you might think. So I'm telling you what I know and what I hear, but that protectionism is definitely still there. And you can see it in evidence in the elementary school foundations that people have set up. You have very active PTAs because they know that they have to shore things up because they no longer see the state, or I don't think that they ever really did, as anything that was stable. You have to remember that school finance changed in 1992. All money that was raised locally used to stay local, and now it's been distributed to the state. And for some people, they think, well, it hasn't been that long, or it has been that long, rather. But it is still very fresh in the minds of many individuals that I represent. So I think that more than anything, they want stability. And I don't think that they're getting it from their state government. At least that's what I'm hearing.
I want to move on to a couple of other subjects, but I just want to explore this just a bit more. Full disclosure that I am a constituent of Stephanie's, and I had voted for her in the last election. I am a Shawnee Mission South graduate. So when I returned to essentially the old neighborhood, and it is far older now than when I was a kid. So I'm wondering kids have grown up and moved out and their parents remain in that area, are they still as committed to the kind of education that Candace is known for, Shawnee Mission District especially, as when their kids are there? Or do you think that they're transitioning more to, well, they have a different thought, right? It's not my kids anymore. Are they ingrained in that old sort of Kansas education ethos?
You know, I'll hear a little bit of both, because I do hear from people who say, well, you know, for crying out loud, did we have iPads in our school? Well, no, we didn't. But as a Shawnee Mission student myself, I remember, learning basic coding from a little Apple IIe, and that would be the 1980s equivalent of the iPad. So technology has always been important in this area. You do have some people saying, now, for crying out loud, do we really need AstroTurf, or do we really need this? Do we really need these large palatial schools being built? But what a lot of people are not aware of is the way that finances are set up. You have the capital outlay fund, which can only be spent on things, and then you have general fund, which can be spent on paying teachers, on classroom materials, things like that. So you have those things sort of siloed out that causes confusion when people are looking at school funding. And so I would like to see, especially from our school board and also from local chambers of commerce and other groups, to sort of give us in the legislature some guidelines for what is it that we mean when we talk about classroom spending? What does that mean? Some people say that classroom spending includes teacher pensions. I want my teachers, the people who I charge with educating my children, to have great pensions. But would I count that as classroom money? No. But some people do, because they like to raise up the numbers and say, oh, we're spending all this money. So I think that when we talk about school spending, the most important thing that we need to do is set our definitions very clear. Don't make things so nebulous, and then say, no, this really is exactly what is going into the classroom. Then we can better determine whether we need to raise spending or whether we need to decrease it. So I think that'll stop a lot of the arguments and, again, bring what I seek, which is stability.
Yeah. Would you measure that by base state aid per pupil?
This is what we would have measured it by before the block grants went in, and now everything seems to be up in the air. So, but base state aid per pupil, it was in the 4,000s. But then you had some groups saying that we're spending 12,000 per kid. And it's like, No, not really. Not from the mom perspective. I know that there is not $12,000 being spent on my kid. Again, great teachers. I want them to have good pensions, but I don't count that as classroom money.
And
not,
the group,
yeah.
Right. And the group you refer to, Candace Policy Institute and the Chamber, as they roll all of that together. David, I saw you just lean in. What do you have to say?
Oh, no, it was
and while you're doing it,
it was interesting
Stephanie,
to see the Candace Policy Institute this week saying there's no such thing as in the classroom funding, as the governor continues to say. We're spending too much on administration and not putting enough money into the classroom. You know, the Kansas Policy Institute was pushing back against an analysis by another group that showed a real decline in, you know, spending per pupil and spending in the classroom. So I think it's really disheartening to see a debate about terms when kids aren't getting the resources they need, teachers aren't getting the resources they need, and then we're seeing topics like non-academic skills being raised by the Department of Education as a distraction, or merit pay. So, I mean, I think how do we keep the debate on funding for the classroom?
I want to. I'm glad you brought up this survey. Essentially, it was a survey by the State Department of Education as they went around as we got a new commissioner, Randy Watson. And I want to play a little piece by Stephen Carand and then talk about that on the other side.
Kansas Education Commissioner Randy Watson says they got some surprising results. Instead of a focus on basic academic skills like reading and math, businesses and Kansans said they want students to have more non-academic skills like teamwork, communication, and persistence.
We thought it would be really 50-50, and Kansans told us it's about 70% of the skill set we want. And then we were really shocked that business was even higher.
Watson says they'll now need to find ways to partner with businesses and bring families into the fold to help students develop those non-academic skills. The Kansas Board of Education will use the information as they develop their overarching goals for K-12 education in Kansas. I'm Stephen Caranda in Topeka.
So, David, you've been paying attention to this, obviously. And so what's your problem with these soft skills, or how you think the Kansas State Department of Education, what direction it's heading in?
I think my concern isn't so much that we're talking about non-academic skills as to augment a solid education. My concern is, you know, we have schools closing in KCK. We have teachers that are migrating. We have districts struggling to find licensed teachers, and we're having unlicensed teachers in the classroom. And, you know, rather than talking about the root cause of some of the problems in the state, we're talking about things like non-academic skills. And I think at a time where there's depleted resources, we should be focused on, you know, the most important task and mission at hand, which is providing quality education, providing the funded needed to make sure our kids succeed. And I just wonder how we can make sure the focus is on that versus on non-academic skills or distractions like merit pay.
Go ahead. Well, yeah, and before Stephanie jumps in, I just want to be mm-hmm. clear that there are teachers in Kansas who are taking an alternative way to the classroom. They are few and far between at this point. But David's point is correct that, you know, that we have these innovative districts, KCK is and Blue Valley among them. But still, the bulk of teachers are still coming the traditional route through mm-hmm. Kansas. That still does leave the question, like, where are you on this? Education is one of your things. As we've heard, it's one of your constituents' things. So should we be looking at what we just heard in that story? Or do we really need to focus like a laser on how we're going to pay for this?
Well, we need to do all of these things. This is quite possibly one of the most multifaceted problems that we deal with in Kansas. This is why we all fight. This is why we have so many disagreements, because education is not just education. I consider the Shawnee Mission School District to be the number one economic development tool for the people in my legislative district. No one is going to move here if we have bad schools. End of sentence. That is absolutely the way that things work. Now, the real question here is that you have all of these people with competing ideas trying to determine what makes a good education. And we think about what makes a good education, but we also have to bear in mind that when we educate students, we have a partnership with private business to send them people who a good educated workforce. So, for instance, I want my children to have a sort of classical education. I want them to be well-versed in all of those things that we would use to determine cultural literacy, right? So I want them to read the right books. I want them to know how to do algebra and so on and so forth. I want them to know their history well, both national and international. I'd like them to learn different languages. We talk about in the Kansas Constitution, it says that we need to provide our students with a suitable education. But as you've listened to some of the things that I've listed, my idea of a suitable education is I've got pretty high standards. And that's the way that I've always wanted it for my children and for children in not only in my district, but in Kansas, because we all benefit when our students are well educated. But for some people, a suitable education is one single tallow candle and a slate. Maybe a piece of chalk, maybe not. Maybe they should just go make that themselves, you know. So you have to reconcile all of these different understandings of what it means for a suitable education. As we go forward and as we've dealt with some of the various court cases, and I'm not inclined to fight with the courts. I'm inclined to believe that there are three branches of government, not two. And as such, when they offer suggestions, for instance, when in one of their opinions regarding, I believe it was the part of the Gannon case, they set up the Rose standards as sort of a guideline. This almost goes with that survey that talked more about soft skills. In the Shawnee Mission District, our superintendent was talking about how excited he was to implement middle school sports. But you know what I would like to see in middle schools? I would like to see more of a focus on debate and forensics and some of these skills of public speaking and writing and communicating in general. Because they're good classical education tools, but also if we have children who learn how to discuss things, how to articulate their ideas, and how to just present things in general, these are the soft skills that businesses are looking for, that sort of teamwork. Teamwork doesn't always happen on the field, and not every child will be athletically inclined. But that sort of push towards things is what I think our business owners are looking for. So that's one of the next steps I hope to see from our school district. Now, as far as looking at things just statewide and trying to get legislators to agree, therein lies the problem.
I want to get Steve back in, but you threw out two names there. I just want to do a quick little explanation. Gannon is the Supreme Court case that we've been talking about school funding, and there's already been briefs on that, and we're going to hear oral arguments later on in the fall. The Rose standards, Gannon and Rose sounds like a law firm. The Rose standards are what the Kansas Supreme Court decided on about how you decide on what a quality education is. That springs out of an old court case in Kentucky. So there is your nerdy education lesson of the day. So let's get back to merit pay, which falls really deeply into what I think could be an ugly political fight. And as we saw, this was an interview that Governor Brownback gave to the AP. So Steve, I'm wondering what your thoughts were when you read that story. My thought was, oh my goodness gracious, this is just he's just seeding more landmines as we get into the as we look forward to the session.
Well, the thing I'm struck by when it comes to the discussion about merit pay is you see in that interview he references private sector, and that, you know, merit pay in education would reflect how realities work in the private sector. The better you work, the better opportunity you have for bonuses and pay increases. But government, which school is in school districts and education really is separate and different from the private sector. And when it comes to teachers, there's a lot of factors that can affect student performance and outcome beyond just what the teacher does. So, for instance, if I'm a middle manager in a company, I can make hiring and firing decisions. I can get my staff, if you will, and I can control my destiny a bit better as an employer. As a teacher, you don't really pick your students. You get your students, and you can work with them. But there's so many different factors that I don't know how well thought out the merit pay thing is going to be. And I know that it's a discussion that's happening beyond just Kansas. It's happening in other places. I just wonder how well thought out the and Brownback was short on details from what I read about how it would
detail is how are we going to work merit pay into the new school funding formula as they start to work on that. So Stephanie, first your thoughts on merit pay, how might we accomplish that, and should it be part of, you know, how a school district, how you decide how much money a school district gets in Topeka?
I think that the concept of merit pay is politically brilliant, but not for a positive reason. Because people in general, we're all busy. We like to hear we like things to be simplified. And so if we say, well, you know, there are good teachers and bad teachers, and we're going to pay the good teachers more. Oh, yeah, that sounds great, doesn't it? But as you've stated, teachers cannot choose their students. And this doesn't necessarily mean it's not really based on socioeconomic status either, because I know plenty of wealthy parents who will let their kids stay up all night with their iPads and throw Doritos at them and not go over their homework with them because they're too busy doing other things and they've got all the money in the world and they're not being good parents to educate their children. Then there are children who are poor, who go to school, who are literally starving, and you cannot do algebra when you're hungry. I've proven this to be true, by the way, back in college. So you run into those elements, but oh, isn't it convenient to say, let's implement merit pay? It is something that we absolutely know cannot be properly implemented. It's something we know that will make schools fail. And then, my goodness, how convenient. If these schools are failing, then why should we fund them? So I see what they're doing there. I'm on to them. I know what's happening. But they're trying to snow the public, and basically they're trying to break public education and then declare it broken.
All right. I want to take one more trip around the table, get some final thoughts or final questions. David, what's your final thought or question for Stephanie?
You've been a champion for transparency efforts, as well as a great tweeter to keep us updated on social media, which has been wonderful.
She is one hell of a tweeter, isn't she?
Thanks, guys.
I'm sure that pleases the rest of your caucus. I see the state budget passing in the middle of the night while most Kansans are sleeping, and the biggest tax raise in the history of the state. I know you had a great transparency bill about recording all committee hearings. Are there other measures that might be helpful to help, open up the windows and let some light in for the rest of Kansans? You know, things like disclosing fees lobbyists have, or other measures, making it easier to track down government documents, even if they're in private emails, that we can do to make governing in Topeka more transparent for the rest of us.
Well, there is a special committee that I wasn't placed on, but it still has a lot of good legislators that are working and looking at more transparency initiatives, because we do have people who are doing business on Gmail, and they're all over the political spectrum. You've got the governor's staff, and you have Hillary Clinton. So as a moderate, I can say, man, look at these guys on the right and the left. They're doing this. But honestly, there are no real standards set for what is subject to open records, what isn't. And so because things are nebulous, you have people who are really trying to do the right thing who end up breaking the rules. You have people who have concerns about what is searchable and what isn't. For instance, I'm very good friends with a fellow legislator, and sometimes I'll text her and tell her about how my kids are doing, and she'll tell me how her dog is doing. Is that government work, or is that a private conversation? So these are conversations that we, as your representatives, need to have. We need to figure that out, and we need to define these things. So as far as the Twitter thing goes, there are a lot of other legislators across the political spectrum who do tweet. I don't know if it necessarily makes my caucus angry. I mean, gosh, they're all super nice to me, and no one has ever made me feel anything but really welcome while I've been up there. Seriously.
Let me, before I get to Steve, I just want to follow up and ask. I mean, do you generally think that the Kansas government is open? My early experience as a reporter in Kansas was that the state was state government was very open. In fact, when Bob Stephan was attorney general, if you had a problem as a reporter, he actually had somebody in his office that you could go to who would help you with your open records request. Excluding Missouri, of course, which is in sort of a place by itself. Do you generally think that government in Kansas is open?
Well,
we can always do better.
Yes, we can. And I think a lot of the standards, our website, for instance, has gotten awards. And we're very open by like a 2002 standard. But no, I mean, it's hard to keep up. Technology is expensive. Transparency costs a lot of money. And so we should do it because it is the right thing. But go take a look at Kansas's revenue numbers. And then, you know, that's where we run into the problem. You are, as constituents, are owed a transparent government. But again, it's hard to keep up. It's expensive to do. And so that's part of the reason why you see a lot of these things not getting passed. They'll get shot down because they're too expensive. The Transparency Act, which I authored and which was, sort of co-driven by my state senator, Senator Kay Wolf. She gets it passed unanimously on the Senate floor every time, and then it won't even be brought above what we call colloquially the line in the House because it costs too much. But then we'll run bills that have a fiscal note of like $500,000. And like those bills are OK. But yeah, no. So I think we understand where things lie. And so I'm just looking forward to my next term when I'll have more opportunities to get that passed. So I'm optimistic.
Steve, your final thought or question?
I would just leave this out there as going back to the merit pay issue, since that's, as you observed, is probably going to be one of the bigger minefields in the next session if that idea moves forward, is how is that going to affect the rural school districts? I mean, we can talk about Johnson County school districts, which have an ability to have a greater ability than the rural school districts to raise money locally to offset losses coming from the state government. However, in the rural school districts, will the merit pay issue make it harder for them to attract quality teachers because of the money issues that they're going to have going forward? And when you institute merit pay, is that going to widen the gap between the haves and the have-nots? That would be a concern that I would have as that discussion moves forward.
I would say that your concerns are all very valid. Because would you want to work in that environment where everything was volatile and you were judged by performance, but you had very little control over the, you know, I hesitate to use students as material, but right. Over the variables mm-hmm. with which you work? No.
Do you think this is going to, and Kansas has had quite an exodus of teachers, is this merit pay discussion, just the discussion, going to, do you think, make it continue to make it harder or increase the difficulty of school districts hiring teachers in Kansas? Just the discussion.
I graduated from Emporia State University. I got my undergrad there in history. And but most of my friends are teachers, as Emporia historically was the teachers' college in Kansas. Trust me when I say I hear from my classmates a great deal on this issue. It has caused them a great deal of concern. And so if you're hearing from veteran teachers on this, no, I don't think that a new teacher would be terribly inclined to say, gosh, this merit pay idea is great. I'm totally going to work there. So I think that it may be a deterrent.
All right, we have to leave it there. David Jordan from Lawrence, thanks for coming over. Great pleasure to have you, my colleague and friend Steve Vakrot from The Pitch. I enjoy your work, and I am glad you're here in Kansas City as a reporter.
Thank you.
Stephanie, as you probably know better than anybody that we've ever had in here, This is where we turn over the podcast to you for your walk-off song. And and I'm wondering, what is it? What song is running through your mind right now that we're going to play out with?
Oh, it's always been running through my mind as I work. So often my colleagues, or not colleagues, but like my friends from college, from high school and what have you, will say, gosh, is it like House of Cards up there? And I'll say no, because one of their suits that the women that wear would take me several years of my legislative pay to purchase. It is nothing like House of Cards. I tell them it's more like Game of Thrones. And so I'm a fan of the books. And then as the show came on, I've become a fan of that as well. And so just thought, well, gosh, our legislative session usually traditionally begins the second Monday in January. So I'll just leave you with the theme song and remind you that winter is coming.
And it will, and thus it shall be. State House Blend is produced by Matt Hodapp. You can subscribe to us on iTunes. Find the podcast on kcur.org/statehouseblend. And our friends over there at Up to Date with Steve Kraske make a little room for us every Tuesday at 11 a.m. Want to sit in David's seat? I'll bet you do. You can email me. I'm at sam@kcur.org. And a fan of the Twitter, we know that Stephanie is a fan of the Twitter. You can follow me. I'm at Sam Zeff. And my co-host, Brian Ellison, is at PTS Brian on the Twitter. That's it for State House Blend this week. I'll see you next time.